Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and it is Friday, April 27th. I cannot believe May is around the corner. I'm finally thinking that spring is officially here in the upper Midwest. I don't know that to be a fact, but I certainly am hoping for it, as I know you are. It's going to be those snow mountains in the parking lot of malls. Those won't go away till July, probably. But interesting conversation with Mark Muska. Always appreciate when he comes in. And Rebecca, we were talking a little bit during the break about you can't put your trust in humans because you will be disappointed.
That's true. That's what the Bible says. That's not original to me.
I get that.
I didn't
that.
Pick that up on my own.
I get it. I get it. But we, again, when we have, we have ideas about certain people. We have images, and we like those images, so we don't want them to go away.
I think that's true because it says something about us that
like
we feel foolish for trusting someone or for thinking that maybe. Mm-hmm. And this is just random musings right now.
That's all right.
On half a cup of coffee. But I think that's what it is. If you have a personal investment in someone that you know through entertainment, or to be more specific, it's the image of somebody you think you know, and you like that person. You think of them almost as your friend, even if you've never met them. And so if there's that amount of trust and connection there, you laugh with them, you cry with them on TV, you believe them. And if it comes out that they're completely different than what you thought, it takes you aback because you think, well, what does this say about me that I didn't know? Or how could they do this to me? It's almost a personal offense. You don't want to believe that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, none of us are above the worst in us without a supernatural power to overcome our own sin nature. And I guess that's what I'm thinking about this morning, that but for the grace of God, go we all. I think sometimes we say that verse, but there's a real depth and a real truth to that, that we don't have the power to be better than we are without transformation from the outside of our own world. It takes a supernatural God to overcome the natural sin urge.
Yes, without the restraining power of the Holy Spirit, you're in trouble.
I would say so. Yes. I think we have evidence of this.
Yes. And you came up with all that wisdom on one half cup of coffee?
I know. I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the next half hour.
I know. Let me quote Dave Barry as we go to break. He, comedian, humorist, he said, "It is inhumane, in my opinion, to force people who have a genuine medical need for coffee to wait in line behind people who apparently view it as some kind of recreational activity."
I'm serious about this.
All right. We'll take a break and then bring on Adam in just a minute.
I couldn't sleep at all last night, just thinking of you. Maybe things weren't right when I was tall.
8 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening. If you're in your car, heading to work, and you're hopefully you have your hands on the wheels. You know, you used to have it at 2 and 10. That used to be the instruction. Now I think it's 4 and 6. Or wait, no, 4 and 8. Because, 4 and 8 is where you're supposed to have them in the event that you're ever in an accident, your airbag went off. That's the new policy, the new thought. So 2 and 10 has gone to 4 and 8. Anyway, how did I get off on that? Anyway, drive carefully. That's my point I'm trying to make. And as you're driving carefully, thinking, what am I going to do this weekend? I always think, well, let's see, you can do recreational activities. You can do family stuff. You can do all kinds of stuff. But movies, where is that on your list of fun things to do? So there's a blockbuster coming out this weekend, which has got a lot of people's attention. The numbers are going to be through the roof, probably the biggest blockbuster of the year. And here to talk about that, Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com, about the movie Avengers Infinity War. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. All right, this thing is off the charts isn't it?
I'm on my second cup of coffee, so I'm already totally at
you braggart?
Cruising altitude, I
you
think.
Braggart, you?
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's talk about Avengers.
Yeah. Well, this is the movie everyone has been waiting for. We have been building to this movie for 10 years and 18 previous Marvel movies. Can you believe that, that there have been this? That,
wow.
That almost all of them have had little plot tendrils that somehow relate to this culmination. And here's the short version. There's this big, well, I'll just say it, ugly dude named Thanos. And Thanos is after six stones called Infinity Stones. And if that sounds like they're powerful, that's right. Basically, if he can get all of them, he'll end up being, for all intents and purposes, excuse me, something close to a god. And he's got one when the movie starts, and he is going after the rest of them. I'm froggy this morning.
That's all right.
And he obviously is going to face a whole bunch of superheroes. Virtually all of the heroes that we've seen in the last 10 years show up at one point or another, one way or another, in this movie. And they're going to try to stop him. So, I mean, that's the big picture. Now, on a slightly more granular level, I think content-wise, we're in the same kind of ballpark that we've been in with most of the other recent Avengers movies. I mean, there's, I would say, a sort of medium level of profanity, and enough that I think it's a real issue. I was frustrated with some of the profanity and just, you know, why does that have to be there? And it's not overwhelming, but it's also not nothing. It definitely contributes to the film's PG-13 rating. And if you've seen any of the commercials, you know there's all sorts of combat. And, again, we've seen this before. this time around, it was fairly intense. There are limbs that get lopped off. There are people who get impaled. There are people who don't make it out the other end. And so that's all I'll say on that count. And mm-hmm. So I think from that perspective, without going any deeper, this is a consequential movie. This is not just another Marvel movie. This is a movie where stuff happens. And it's the kind of movie that I think if you're heavily invested in the Marvel Universe, it's a movie that packs an emotional wallop.
Okay.
In a way that I'm not sure any of the other films before it do. So, really, especially if you've got kids that are sensitive who might be young teens, I don't know that I would take anybody under that. This is a movie for which the PG-13 rating is, that's the right rating here. You're going to maybe want some time to talk about what you just saw afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you anticipate the box office take to be over the weekend?
You know, I've seen estimates, you know, 225, 240. Wow. It's always a guesstimate.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Thursday night figures, and it looks like the Thursday figures will be higher than anything they've ever had. It's like something like 43 million last night.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is off to the races. And as you were saying, it might be the biggest superhero movie of the year, but it's going to have to compete against itself, or at least its own company, on two levels. I mean, I think nobody expected Black Panther to make almost $700 million. And even though I think this is a movie everybody's going to want to see, in 3 weeks, Solo, a Star Wars Story, comes out. So Black Panther had this multi-month run ahead of it without much competition, whereas this is going to face competition from another Disney movie in just a couple of weeks. And I don't think it'll make $700 million.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's there. I think Black Panther will end up being the biggest film of the year.
Wow. All right, Adam, let me take a little break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Adam Holt from PluggedIn.com. Be back in a minute.
Thank you.
Ah, The Sting. Fine movie. 17 minutes after the hour, speaking to Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. Adam, what about the way in which the movie industry has obviously the capacity to have a major impact in people's minds and imaginations, and how smart of an idea is it for Christians to be excitedly talking about certain secular movies?
That's a great question, Bill. You know, we live in a world that says entertainment is a huge part of, you know, what we think is important culturally. It makes billions and billions of dollars. And so I think that as Christians, our job is to follow Jesus, is to walk with him, and to try to make wise decisions about what we engage with. And I think that when we talk about media discernment, making choices that are in harmony with what we believe, the first thing we need to do is to be actively engaged. And what I mean by that is a lot of us consume all kinds of entertainment, movies, television, music, video games, passively. We think, I have a right to chill out, I have a right to relax, I just want to have a little bit of fun. And we check our brains at the door. And I think that when we're engaging with entertainment of any kind passively, what that does is it opens the door to be influenced by the values of what we're taking in without even really understanding it and without even really knowing that that's happening. And so I think my challenge to everyone listening today is don't be a passive entertainment consumer, but make a decision as best you can on the front end with the information you have, and then afterward, talk about it. And don't do it alone either. I mean, I think watch a movie with somebody, go out and have a conversation and say, what were the ideas there that really got my attention? What is this movie's worldview? What does it say is right, is good, is you know, praiseworthy? Because every movie has a worldview. Every movie is preaching a message. Sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes it's in your face. Most of the time it's somewhere in between. And so I think to the extent that to which we can engage actively, that really helps us not to just be susceptible to ideas that are really contrary to the gospel. And having said that, there's a lot of stuff out there that is just flat out contrary to the gospel. Mm-hmm. That probably there's no reason to engage with it at all. But movies like the Marvel superhero movies, they're a mixed bag. You know, they've been amazing stories, and they offer touch points with things that are perhaps in harmony with what we believe as Christians about sacrificing for others, about putting others' needs ahead of our own. You know, but sometimes there are weird spiritual worldviews that get welded in too. You know, both Doctor Strange and Black Panther had pretty strange worldview issues in some ways, and so. Again, I think if you're willing to talk about that, it doesn't mean that you have to say no to everything, but engage with it. Mm-hmm. Don't be a passive consumer, and don't just let it sweep over you and influence your thinking without even understanding what's going on.
Adam, talk a little bit about how images can be so persuasive that old saying is, oops, you can't unsee that.
Yeah. Well, images, obviously... communicate in a different way than words do. And when you see something, it can just stick there. And like you said, there are some things that you can't unsee. And I think especially when it comes to images of sexuality and images of violence, and images sometimes where those two things get tangled up in a really awful way, those things are back there. And so we have to be wise in saying, what am I willing to take in and to accept and to say this is okay in the name of entertainment? And I think we're living in an increasingly image-based culture across the board, from our smartphones to our tablets to our 60-inch flat-screen TVs to movies. It's all about images, and I think we can become somewhat desensitized. We see stuff, and we're like, oh, I've seen that before. And we don't stop to think, should I be seeing stuff like that? And so I think there's a cumulative effect of all of these images bombarding us all the time. And so, you know, I think for most of us, stepping back and saying, what would it look like for me to be more intentional in my entertainment choices? I think for most of us, that would be a good thing. I mean, without saying stop doing everything, it's easy to be passive. It's easy to just want to consume. But God calls us to a really active stance in terms of our faith and how we engage with everything in our lives, and entertainment media are one part of that.
Mm-hmm. Adam, when I think of 1 Corinthians 14:20, it says, brothers and sisters, stop thinking like children. In regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults.
Yeah, so, no, that's exactly right. And, you know, Paul also says, and he was quoting another thinker at the time, he says, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything is permissible thing, if you look it up, I think it's in 1 Corinthians also, is in quotes. So he was basically taking an idea of the time and then commenting on it. He was juxtaposing another point of view. And so I think just a basic question, is this going to be beneficial?
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to help me or my family? And if the answer is a clear no, then why would you engage in it?
Mm-hmm. And then I think of some of the movies that I've seen over the years that I'm glad I've seen. You know, secular movies like Gladiator or, you know, Saving Private Ryan, To Kill a Mockingbird, Schindler's List. I mean, these are movies that moved me in a profound way. So I guess I'm glad I saw those, even though they were difficult.
Yeah, and they were hard movies. And again, movies like those that depict a difficult reality,
mm-hmm.
those are movies that we need to process together and not just sort of let it sit inside, but do that work together to understand what you just saw, how you're reacting, and what they're illustrating, and even understanding why you responded so emotionally to something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a movie like Saving Private Ryan, that's not, you don't have to dig too deep to understand how it provokes an emotional response.
Right.
But I saw, years ago, I saw the movie The Perfect Storm, which is about a bunch of fairly boneheaded fishermen who go out into this big storm and know that it's a risk, and they all die.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the outcome. Sorry, spoiler warning there. I knew the outcome before I saw the movie, but it really, really, really provoked a deep emotional reaction that I wasn't expecting. And I had to do some work to figure out what is going on here. I didn't even understand what it was about, but I think it was about these men's relationship with each other, that they were willing to take a risk together, and admittedly, it was perhaps a reckless risk. But that provoked something in me about my own relationships with my friends, and you know, how often do we play it safe in a fearful way versus going for it in the way that God wants us to.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we don't know how we're going to react to a movie, and it's good to kick it around afterwards.
Yeah, because stories can certainly build us up, good stories, and difficult stories we can learn from, and then there are other stories that just tear us down, and we really have no business being engaged with those.
That's exactly right, Bill.
I mean, I still like the original Rocky, which is, you know, you think of that movie and you go, I like that movie. That was inspirational. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and Rocky became the template, really, for an entire genre of sports movies. So it was, not only was it a successful movie, it was so successful that for the last 35 years, Rocky gets remade two or three times a year with some other sports story. You know, this year we had the volleyball movie a couple weeks ago that the name is totally escaping me already. See, that's my brain. It goes away quickly.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right, Adam, I will look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for being on the show. Have a great weekend.
You do the same, Bill.
All right.
Thanks.
Yep, you bet. 26 and a half minutes after the hour, we'll take a little break and go to Breakpoint. Minutes after the hour, we'll take a little break for news, and then we're going to have a conversation with Chris Martin from Lifeway Research, the millennial evangelical. Weird little thing going on where kids are cyberbullying themselves. That I don't get. We'll talk about that with Chris in just about 8 minutes.
In your home and mine, respect is a key issue. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If disrespectful comments are the norm in your household, something's got to be done. Because relationships won't be healthy unless there's mutual respect. So here's what I challenge parents to do. First, admit that you may be contributing to the disrespect in your home. If that's the case, admit it and apologize for any belittling or bitterness you've added to the equation. Then call for a family dinner and announce that you're making some changes. You'll make an effort to be different and you expect the same from your team. You might be surprised at the outcome when you have the courage to take this first step.
Navigating a child's teen years is one of the biggest challenges that parents will face, which is why Mark Gregston has developed a new free online parenting course. Get started now at freeparentingcourse.com.
Minutes until the top of the hour. It is Friday, which means it's broccoli casserole night, maybe. me and my cooking. It's really bad. Just not good. Anyway, I've got Chris Martin on our studio line from Lifeway Research and the Millennial Evangelical. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What are you guys having tonight for dinner?
My wife's out of town,
so
I am probably making pizza for myself or something like that.
You mean you're putting a frozen pizza in the oven?
No.
You make it?
I worked at a pizza joint all through high school and college. I know how to make good pizza, so I'll be making my own good pizza.
Okay, but isn't the key in the crust?
Yeah, and the crust is going to be store-bought, so...
All right, you just took yourself down a peg or two there, Chris, just so you know. All right, this next topic, probably more important to discuss versus your homemade pizza, is this trend calling itself digital self-harm, how teenagers are cyberbullying themselves. I had a hard time spitting that out. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so I was looking at some articles about this and looking at the more recent one that had been posted via NPR and then some older ones that had been posted in the past couple of years. They say in a study of about 5,600 teenagers-ish, ages 12 to 17, about 6% say they've engaged in some sort of digital self-harm, and more than half say they've bullied themselves online more than once. And I've been on the internet for a long time since I was that age, and back when it wasn't as normal for kids to be on the internet when they were that age, I guess. And in early 2000s, and I remember, like I told someone this the other day, like I remember being mean to people online. Now, generally, they were like, you know, they were friend, like people I knew in real life, and we were friends, and we were just like kind of, you know, jabbing each other, goofing around or whatever.
Yeah, that's your love language.
But yeah, right, exactly.
With guys.
But right, yeah, right. But I've never heard of this. I'd never really heard of this. Now, when I was reading the article and they were talking about how it's concerning and that they have people who have, you know, kind of sought counseling or gone to psychologists for this sort of thing, and they're likening it to things like cutting or other forms of self-harm. I was reading all of this stuff and look, I'm not a psychologist. So mm-hmm. it may very well be on the level of something like that. But when I think about just the logic of quote unquote digital self-harm or cyberbullying yourself, mm-hmm. I mean what it practically comes down to is it's you setting up a fake account on Instagram to once you post a picture of yourself, you know, trying to look cool or doing something or whatever, then you log into the fake account and you post a disparaging comment about yourself. Now, there are two reasons I could see someone doing this. One, they genuinely don't like themselves, and it is a form of like self-hatred that needs to be addressed in some sort of counseling situation. Like they may end up physically hurting themselves, or you know, it may be a manifestation of self-harm, and just perhaps an early stage of that where they feel like they need to put themselves down publicly, but at the same time, logically, anyone who uses the internet for any significant amount of time knows that when someone posts a tweet or a picture on Instagram or something like that, and they get nasty comments sent their way, what always follows is a flurry of positive comments.
Interesting.
So could people be cyberbullying themselves or digitally self-harming, however you want to say that, because they genuinely hate themselves and that it needs to be addressed because it could lead to some more serious form of self-harm, like physical or whatever? Yes, that could very well be the case. This is why I say I'm not a psychologist. So that mm-hmm. it may be that.
Mm-hmm.
But logically, I mean, I could just see a 14-year-old who is active on Instagram and wants to get more positive comments about her outfit posting some nasty comment to get people to rally to her defense.
Sure.
Reading it, I think it could easily be either one. I think it's just a person-to-person thing. Some folks may really be, you know, this may be a new frontier of psychological, you know, self-harm, or it may just be teenagers looking for attention.
Kristen,
like teenagers always have.
Haven't we called this fishing for compliments? Like,
yeah,
forever.
Right. I mean, people do it in conversation all the time. Like, yeah. Oh, hey, that suit looks really nice on you. Oh, nah, it's just I just picked it up. You know, don't really look that great. Yeah. I could work out more.
Oh, I hate my new haircut. Oh no, it looks great.
Yeah, I really just see it as the digital form. Like sometimes, and again, there may be a psychologist listening who thinks I'm way off base, and that's I would take that criticism. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think we overthink a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that teenagers who post nasty comments about themselves online may not be digitally self-harming as much as they are digitally fishing for compliments.
They're working a system.
Right. Because it works. And I spend enough time on Twitter and otherwise to see that, oh man, that person just got blasted for, you know, posting that comment on Twitter. And then like 18 people come running to his defense or her defense. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of the circle of life when it comes to online commenting and discussion, is when someone gets trolled or gets a nasty comment, often friends or just peers who don't even know them will come to their defense. I think teenagers may just be looking for that because the social, and we've talked about this before. I've talked about this with all kinds of folks. The more social media becomes prevalent, the more especially image-based, like photography-based, image-based social media becomes the more popular for, like Instagram and Snapchat mm-hmm. become the dominant forms of social media, the more social anxiety and feelings of inadequacy and like self-hatred may be growing among young people because they don't feel like, you know, I don't have 2,000 Instagram followers as a 13-year-old. I'm not getting 30 comments as soon as I post a selfie, I feel bad about myself. Like that's a reality. But what we have to think about is, are people posting nasty comments about themselves because they hate themselves, or do they want to generate those 30 comments that their friends get right away? You know, I think it could be either one. And but either way, teens are more anxious about themselves and their image because of social media today, no matter how we interpret digital self-harm. It's a reality.
Yeah. Chris, earlier in the program, we were talking to a theologian, Dr. Mark Muska, and we were talking a little bit about the Apostle Paul, who kind of summarized by saying, you know, basically, you know, I have a low opinion of myself, and I have a low opinion of your opinion of me. Kind of a healthy way to go.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I think we need to be more I'm not against positivity by any means.
No,
but,
I'm not
either. I think we need to be more tempered in how we take people's views of us and honestly how we view ourselves. We need to hold all of that with an open hand and understand that, you know, we're going to be mature or immature you know, and we gotta handle that and trust that the Lord loves us regardless of where we're at.
Right. And that all that really matters is that, you know, we answer to Christ first and not seek the approval of others.
Exactly.
In such a rabid way. All right, Chris, let me take a break. It's 15 minutes till the top of the hour. When I return, we're going to talk a little bit about millennials and their TV viewing habits in terms of their kids. So we'll be back in a minute with Chris Martin. Minutes until the top of the hour. Chris Martin is my guest, and a fine one indeed. Chris, I understand that millennials now are setting more time limits on their kids and their TV viewing habits than any other generation.
Yeah, Pew Research Center, or sorry, not Pew. That's usually who I'm coming with, but right. Barna released some research in 2017, actually via Andy Crouch's book, The TechWise Family, which I'll talk more about in a minute.
Okay.
They released some data showing that a higher percentage of millennial parents set time limits on their children's TV consumption than parents of older generations. And it's really interesting. Like I was kind of surprised, and then I'm kind of not, because I think part of it comes down to wording. So we'll talk about that too here in a second. But here's the data. According to the research, 59% of all U.S. parents set some sort of time limit on how much their children can spend watching TV. Millennial parents are the only generation of parents who beat that 59% national average. Both Gen X parents and Boomer parents fall below that. So 72% of parents set a time limit on the amount of TV that their children watch. Just 57% of Gen X and 53% of Boomers.
Wow.
So you know, someone might say, well, wait a second, I thought millennials were the young people who are obsessed with technology and constantly wanting to be in front of a TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, okay, stereotypes are sometimes unhelpful, but it's fair to say that we should think more deeply about this data, because I didn't look at the exact question that was asked. I should have, but it wasn't available in the book and I couldn't find the report. So the exact question that was asked, I'm sure, was, do you put time limits on your children watching television? Now, what we know about millennials as parents is more of them don't have TV like they did when they were children. So as parents, you know, they've cut the cord, like they don't have cable. They'll just use an antenna, or they'll have a super basic cable package. Like, I think, for instance, we're not parents yet. My wife and I, we're not parents yet, but we I think we're technically cable customers, because it was cheaper to have internet and cable TV than internet by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I've literally never plugged in the box. Like, I only use the antenna. Yeah. Because it doesn't come through high definition. It doesn't have anything beyond what like the basic channels are anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I'd rather get high definition through my antenna than non-high definition through the basic cable box they gave me. But that's a whole other discussion. I think the reason they do that is because they want to keep their numbers up and make it look like fewer people are cutting the cord.
Okay.
So all of that to say is, well, it would be easy to say, well, of course millennials are limiting TV viewing time more because they're not watching as much TV in general. And that's where I think I want to pat millennials on the back for limiting TV time more than previous generations. At the same time, what this question didn't ask is about screen time.
Yes.
It did not ask, are you limiting your kids watching YouTube time?
Yes.
And depending on how millennials – now, some could have interpreted that question as, you know, some could have said, oh, yeah, I limit how much time they watch on YouTube. And that's what they think of as TV. You know, we can't dive into how each person who responded to the survey was thinking about the word, quote unquote, TV, because – that word can mean different things to different people. Some people use TV as screen time in general. Some people only mean sitting in the living room on the couch watching the big screen TV. You know, people might have interpreted that differently. Regardless, I asked the question, why? Let's assume this data is accurate. Why are millennials setting more limits? And the data doesn't show you that. So this is a bit of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in part, millennials, because their parents probably weren't setting many limits on their TV consumption as kids, recognize the negative or detrimental effects having no limits on television can have, because many of them perhaps didn't have limits on television as kids. I mean, my parents tried to limit how much TV I could watch. Granted, I was playing more video games than watching TV, I think, but I think millennials, especially those growing up in the 80s with cartoons and really when it started to become a big deal before it really ever was before, probably recognize that, hey, it would have been good if we had more limits when we were kids. Let's do that for our children. I think that's probably one of the big reasons. But then also I asked the question, how can parents realistically set limits? So I just got finished reading Andy Crouch's book, The TechWise Family. He's written a number of great books, Playing God, Culture Making, Strong and Weak, a number of great books. But TechWise Family, he released about a year ago. And it's just about how he and his family, like it's kind of like 10 commandments for being a TechWise family is kind of the premise. And he has 10 different kind of practices, super practical book on how to limit technology in your home. You know, keep technology from taking over your home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, even though I'm not a parent yet and it's about like a family situation, it made me preemptively think, how can we set our home up for when we do have children to be a TechWise family? So here are three quick basic ways that I think parents can realistically set limits on technology and TV specifically in their home. So first, don't have a TV in your central room. This comes straight from Andy Crouch, and I'm guilty of this. We have our TV in our family room, but it's if you put your TV in a basement or in a bonus room or in a room that isn't the room where your family spends the most time, you're more likely to just turn it on and passively watch it or have it on, you know, while you're eating dinner or things like that. Secondly, don't buy a big cable package. Again, nothing wrong with this, but if you buy, you know, a $200 a month huge cable package where you have everything you could ever want to watch, even if you just decide, hey, we're going to put limits on how much we watch TV, you may be more inclined to watch more TV when you're spending that much money a month on it. You may feel kind of like hey, we got to get our money's worth,
right?
And watch everything we can for this $200 a month cable bill,
right?
Or whatever. And then three, don't let the TV stay on if you're not watching it. I'm also guilty of this, especially during baseball season.
Mm-hmm.
I will just passively watch a baseball game while I'm writing a blog post or answering email or something like that. I'll just turn a baseball game on because we've got MLB TV, and I'll just have it sitting in the background and not really pay attention to it. If you can stop passively watching TV, your children especially will have more quality time. They'll have more time to get creative and not kind of just zone and watch what's on the screen. So that's kind of my thoughts on millennials and restricting TV. I think it's great, but I think I'm hesitant to pat millennials on the back so much because of the whole YouTube bit, because I know a lot of folks who babysit their kids with YouTube, and there's a balance. There's nothing wrong with letting your kids watch YouTube, but it is important to limit that time as well.
Mm-hmm. Free advice here. I think the only TV should be in the laundry room. Hey kids, while you're watching TV, would it kill you to fold some t-shirts?
Yeah, there you go.
Eventually the laundry would get done.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's just the way I think, Chris.
They'd be begging for laundry to do.
I know they would, wouldn't they? All right, go make your pizza tonight with your store-bought crust.
Thank you.
All right, have a great weekend.
Don't shame me too much.
Yeah, I won't. Thanks, Chris. 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show.
It's morning. The good part, that's up to you. With a little help from Bill Arnold and the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Thanks for being with us this morning. It looks like the entire morning team has just wandered into the studio. Paul Perreault is in here as well. Paul, say hi. Give everyone a big encouragement for a great weekend.
Yeah, get out and enjoy the weather. It's going to be beautiful, at least in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, and Rebecca, what is your pearls of wisdom?
Don't plan a wedding on half a cup of coffee. That's all I've got right now.
You got a big wedding coming up, don't you?
Yeah, it's mine.
Well, there you go.
I got a month.
1 month.
No pressure.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. Well, thanks for listening, and just want to pray a big blessing on all of you listeners today and all that you have plans to do today and over the weekend. I just pray for God's wisdom in your life and discernment, and I will see you Monday morning. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.